there's a lot of fear and suspicion around natural gas infrastructure in our region. From residents protesting injection wells where fracking wastewater is placed underground.
I mean, that is plain and simple poison that they're pumping into the ground.
To fears over pipelines exploding near homes and schools. I'm Kara Holsoppel. This week on the Allegheny Front, the fears and realities of living with the shale gas industry. Those and more environmental stories are coming up on the Allegheny Front. Stay with us. A bill in front of Pennsylvania lawmakers would establish tougher penalties for people who vandalize pipelines, power plants, and other, quote, critical infrastructure facilities. It also targets people who trespass with the intent to damage such property. Republicans who have supported the measure say it's necessary to punish people who commit crimes that affect the greater community, like cutting a fiber optic line that provides internet and phone service. Representative John Marr from southwestern Pennsylvania chairs a House committee that advanced the bill. He says the new charges would fall between two extremes.
Having a petty trespassing or a terrorism charge as the only two options seems to be leaving our prosecutors a bit scratching their heads.
Democrats who oppose the bill, environmentalists, and civil liberties groups have expressed concern that the proposed penalties are too severe and that the bill impedes upon First Amendment protest rights. A number of states in the past few years have considered similar measures as protests over pipelines have become more frequent. Residents in the Pittsburgh suburb of Plum spoke out against a proposed fracking waste injection well recently. At a public hearing, residents said they were worried about water contamination, truck traffic, and the possibility that the well could cause earthquakes. But the company's officials said seismic activity was unlikely. Ben Wallace of Penico Environmental Solutions said injection wells can cause earthquakes. But he said his company's well would not be putting enough fluid underground to cause one.
While this well is permitted at 54,000 barrels a month, that's actually a very low volume well in terms of wells that produce seismic activity.
The facility will process fracking waste that contains radioactive material, salts, and heavy metals. Much of the wastewater from Pennsylvania's fracking industry is actually trucked across the border to Ohio. More than a billion gallons of frack waste, with almost half coming from Pennsylvania and West Virginia, were injected into underground wells in Ohio just last year. And residents in at least one county say they've had enough. The Allegheny Front's Julie Grant has more.
Michelle Gurman used to marvel at the 22 acres of land around her home in Vienna, Ohio, less than 10 miles from the Pennsylvania border.
I would lean out my back window and look and say, oh my God, you know, I've never dreamed of owning this much land.
Gurman didn't know much about fracking then, let alone frack waste injection wells, but she remembers New Year's Eve 2011 when a magnitude 4 earthquake shook nearby Youngstown.
Oh my God.
That's a YouTube clip by a Youngstown resident. Around a dozen smaller quakes followed. The state determined that these quakes were from an injection well. That's where fracking wastewater is trucked in and pumped into deep wells under high pressure. The well believed to have caused the Youngstown quakes has since been permanently closed. But Garman's view really changed in 2013 when an injection well was built on the property right next door.
You're looking at tanks and cement and fencing. It was trees and deer and turkey.
Gurman says big trucks carrying chemical-laced wastewater squeal in at all hours. Today, you can hear the pump from her yard. And Gurman fears for her family.
How does it affect our health, my son's health? I mean, it is toxic, what they're putting in. I mean, that is plain and simple poison that they're pumping into the ground.
Gurman says her concerns didn't get much response from the Ohio Department of Natural Resources, known as ODNR, the agency with authority over the oil and gas industry. And few leaders in Vienna wanted to criticize the local company, Cleese Development Associates, that built the well next to her. But then,
state agencies are looking into an oil spill in Vienna Township that killed dozens of animals and polluted a wetland.
It was another injection well owned by Cleese. Garman says neighbors contacted her for help.
People were scared. Can I drink the water? Can I bathe my children in it? Can I cook with it?
In Ohio, there's no local control of the oil and gas industry. The ODNR is in charge. The state forced Cleese to shut in the injection well, and it's still closed. The company could not be reached for comment. This day, leaders from townships in Trumbull County are gathered at the gazebo in Brookfield Town Square. Brookfield Township Trustee Gary Lease is coaching people to send letters to lawmakers in Columbus.
This goes to the House.
They want legislation that would stop more injection wells in Trumbull County, which already has 17, among the most in the state, with six more in the works. State Representative Glenn Holmes is here. He says people are fed up and references a petition against a plan for 5 injection wells in Brookfield Township.
We have about 8,000 people with 5,000 signatures. They don't want it.
Holmes has 2 bills in the Ohio House of Representatives. One, introduced last spring, would divert more than a third of the fees Ohio collects from other states' frack waste disposal to local governments. Last year, fees for this waste brought in more than $650,000. Holmes says counties should get a cut.
So you have the truck traffic, you have the noise, and you also have the stress and the tensions. Is this going to cause an earthquake? Is my aquifer or my well going to be polluted because of this?
More recently, Holmes introduced another bill to stop ODNR from permitting any more injection wells in Trumbull County. Ted Auk doesn't think that's a good idea. He's with the nonprofit Frack Tracker Alliance. He worries that a cap per county would actually open up more of the state to injection wells. And Auk says money from fees should be spent on inspectors.
You can't have your number of inspectors be static and your number of wells go up, up, and away, because that means the ratio of number of wells per inspector is going up.
Auk warns that Ohio has become a dumping ground for other states' fracking wastewater. The ODNR says it has strong regulations for injection wells, but declined an interview for this story, as did the Ohio Oil and Gas Association. For the Allegheny Front, I'm Julie Grant.
Electric and hybrid car owners will soon have access to dozens of free charging stations at Pennsylvania's parks and forests. It's part of an effort by the state's Department of Conservation and Natural Resources to reduce its carbon footprint and better serve park visitors. Sarah Hoover has more.
Washington Crossing Historic Park in Bucks County, where George Washington famously crossed the Delaware, is now the site of another revolutionary move. Stations that can charge up to 4 vehicles. Park manager George Calaba expects area commuters will welcome the chance to detour into the park to charge up.
People who are heading to work in the morning right here at our crossroads of River Road and State Route 532, every morning it's backed up 50 cars, 30 cars going east, west, north, and south.
More than 1,600 electric cars are operating in the Philadelphia region, and the goal is to highlight green options for those drivers and others, says Cindy Adams-Dunn, who leads the State Department of Conservation and Natural Resources.
It demonstrates and encourages a technology that will frankly help Pennsylvania's environment in the future. So we don't want obstacles for people to make these good environmental decisions.
Installation of nearly 40 charging stations throughout the state is expected by 2020. In Philadelphia, Sarah Hoover.
The Trump administration is attempting to roll back dozens of environmental regulations, including vehicle emission standard, a methane rule to curb leaks from oil and gas operations on public lands, and the Waters of the U.S. rule, which helps define which bodies of water are protected under the Clean Water Act. But all of this is not happening without a fight. The Natural Resources Defense Council is a group that's taken on the administration 25 times in court over these rollbacks, and won 21. For our podcast, Trump on Earth, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier spoke with the NRDC's chief counsel, Mitch Bernard, about what's ahead.
Given that the Trump administration has been very successful in getting a lot of its judicial appointments made to date, what happens when the judiciary starts to absorb a lot of these appointments? Does it make it harder for you to prove your case before these federal judges?
That's a very good question, and we'll see. I worry about it, but less than many other people do. If a judge is qualified to sit on the bench, by which I mean he or she is rigorous and independent and open-minded, then I think we're going to get a fair shot. if that judge is a conservative on various issues or is a Republican or appointed by a Republican administration or confirmed by a Republican Senate, that doesn't worry me very much. As you move up in the system, in the circuit courts of appeal and especially the Supreme Court, ideology tends to matter more. Those courts are making law. They're announcing law. They're not just applying it. The other thing to remember is that NRDC's cases mostly are law enforcement cases. We're holding people, either the government or a private polluter, accountable to the law. There's nothing about that endeavor that should turn off a conservative judge, even if that judge is not a big fan of NRDC.
I mean, the sort of broader question may be, is this a good system for deciding how to regulate the environment? I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people don't like the litigiousness of our society. You know, that's just a general sort of overlay. And a lot of the work of the government is being, you know, depending on how you look at it, held up or held back by these lawsuits.
I would say thank goodness for that. Without the rule of law, where would we be? You know, it's one of the things that separates us from other countries, other forms of government. And it's part of what keeps us from descending into a kind of, to me, a kind of chaos or autocracy. And then when people don't obey the law, that's when you turn to the courts. Because without enforcement, these laws are just statements. They don't have the meaning they're intended to have in the real world.
Let's say there's another president who gets elected in 2020 who has different opinions about regulations than this one. How easy will it be for them to go back on some of the Trump administration's rollbacks or, you know, the rules that they're creating that are more generous to industry? How hard will it be for them to sort of reverse course on some of these laws?
Well, if they do it correctly, it's not going to be so easy. It's going to take time. Because as I said, you have to go through the proper procedures. First of all, you have to decide what you think is the right thing to do and what Trump initiatives you really can't live with or want to refine or revise in some way. And then you have to go through a sometimes lengthy process to elicit public comment and consider that comment. And then you have to put together a factual record and then see where that leads you. So if you do it correctly, then at the very least, it will take time. To the extent the Trump administration succeeds in ripping up sound and critical environmental and human health protections, it's going to take years to repair that damage, even after a new president is elected who wishes to do that.
So in a way, even if they lose 80% of their court cases, they're succeeding in gumming up the works for whoever comes in next.
Well, they're succeeding in part. They've been stymied a lot. They've wanted to change a lot of things that they have not yet been permitted to change. But they do get some things through, and they certainly have big plans. When you look at the Waters of the United States rule or the Clean Power Plan, I mean, these are huge and hugely significant areas of regulation that, if they get their way, will be upended. Undoing that kind of damage will take a lot of time and effort.
Mitch Bernard is lead counsel for the Natural Resources Defense Council. He spoke with the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier for our podcast, Trump on Earth. Thanks for joining us on the Allegheny Front. Kathy Naur is the executive producer of our show. I'm Carol Holsapple.